Good evening, my darklings. Welcome to another edition of the Paranormal 360 here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Tonight, we have an interesting show lined up for you. My guest will be with us for both hours as we explore a fascinating subject. What if the truth is out there? And what if it's happening to someone you know? Haley Allison Ramsey has lived it. Not just eerie lights in the sky or strange dreams, but the undeniable reality of being taken. An alien experiencer. She comes forward with strange details of her encounters with extraterrestrial beings. Are we truly alone, or are we being watched, studied, and chosen? The answers might be more unsettling than you imagined. This is the Paranormal 360. Haley Allison Ramsey joining us right now. Haley, thank you so much for being here this evening.
Thank you so much for having me. And I have to be quite honest, this is the first time that I'm really coming out and sharing all of this information. So,
well, that's why I cut you the check for $18.75, because I thought the story was worth paying for.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. I'm excited to share this all with you guys tonight.
Now, this is something unique for me. Having done paranormal radio now for 19 years, most of the experiencers, abductees, people of that ilk, have just been people that have written books, been on documentaries, films. I don't know them. I don't know them personally. And tonight's probably the very first time I've gone into an interview actually knowing somebody, being friends with a person. And I only just recently found this out about you while I've been working pretty diligently over the last year on a new documentary series. And Scott Walter has been a part of that. And you have been in the background with us on a few of these moments and kind of opened up to me about your life and some very strange experiences. With that, I want to start off kind of, we're going to go a little bit out of order, but I want to start off with the things that we've talked about off air, with the concept of aliens, alien abduction, interaction. If you were pressed right now, how positive are you that these things actually happened to you and that they're not something else, maybe masked memories or dreams? How do you know the difference between that and it being an actual event?
The fact of the matter, Dave, actually is I'm not certain, and I can't say for sure one way or the other. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say I can. That's part of the reason why I've been hesitant to come out and share these stories. And because of the line of work that I'm in, the line of work that Scott's in, I've been really hesitant to share my story and put that out there because I haven't wanted to risk my credibility and for other people to look down on me for sharing my stories. But with the world that we're living in now and this time and age, I think that it's important that people come forward because these things are happening to so many more people that just don't feel comfortable sharing their stories. But there's clearly a worldwide phenomenon of these things taking place, and other people are experiencing the same things. With that said, I am certain I had something happen to me because I have physical evidence.
Right. And I want to hold that in hour two. I want to go into more of the evidential aspect, and especially because this is your story is the first of its kind. Again, in 19 years, that's saying something. Mm-hmm. I have heard a lot of stories from people, a lot of experiences, and a lot of claims of evidence left behind. And yours is unlike anything. So we'll dive into that in hour two. But I want to begin with, what is your first memory of having experiences like this? Around what age were you?
Well, it's really hard to determine because in a lot of cases, I have a bit of a background in sociology and psychology, and I've always been fascinated by how the human brain handles trauma. Mm-hmm. And even in situations, for example, with people that are dealing with high stress, especially in early childhood, or in cases of sexual assault, serious violent crime, they have screen memories. They remember things in a different way that's not as painful to remember. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for abductees that have very disturbing encounters, correct? So this is something, too, going back to children. And when speaking to a psychologist at one point, she made the point of telling me that a lot of times kids will have these screen memories, or they'll remember it in a way that is easier for their brain to process as children. And she pointed out to me at one point, she goes, for example, a child can't quite make sense of an alien abduction when they're real young. So they might remember it as have a screen memory or experience it as a dream where maybe they're being chased by dinosaurs. And I remember when she said that to me, and I just thought, oh my God, because when I was a child, I used to have this dream every single year that this is going to sound so silly, but I would have this dream that the dinosaurs would be able to come out once a year and wreak havoc upon the earth. And I would always be chased in this exact same area near my house. And I was always trying to escape dinosaurs. And I'd be running into any shelter building, gas station, house nearby. There'd be one specific dinosaur chasing me, ripping the roofs off the buildings, trying to get me. And I never thought anything about it my whole life. I would have it on the exact same night every year from the time I was about 4 or 5 years old up until maybe I was 6 or 7 and it stopped. But I never would have associated that with aliens. And perhaps that has nothing to do with aliens, but it just was something that kind of clicked in my mind as, could have that been start for me from the time I was a small child? Could it have been going on a lot longer than I even realize? Or was it simply just a dream and a fear that I randomly had once a year?
You know, it's fascinating. Obviously, in listening to a story like that, it brings to mind the reptilian race of aliens that many people claim to encounter and see. And I think about even my grandson, Declan, is fascinated by dinosaurs. And you think about how many children are drawn to dinosaurs in what almost seems like an unhealthy way sometimes.
Exactly.
And you know, it begs the question, why of all the things that are out there are children so drawn to this? Is it because there is something going on and their brains are masking the concept of aliens, or they're seeing reptilian-like creatures and because of their small stature and maybe the 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot tall beings look like a living dinosaur to them? So it's really kind of fascinating. I would love to start researching with people that are seeing aliens, especially the reptilian race, or believe that, did they have dinosaur-like encounters growing up? It's certainly something to ponder, right? Because we can't just throw every concept like this out. Sometimes there are things to it. Now, on the other side, I've talked to guests who've told me horrific experiences with being molested by aliens or Bigfoot or demonic creatures in their room. And the more I get to know that person, maybe even on a personal basis, I start to realize, I think this is a disassociative issue. I think this is a lot more human that happened to them in an unfortunate situation with a family member or close friend. And they're remembering it in a way, like you said, that's helping them break from the reality. It's right. Easier to imagine the boogeyman did this to me and maybe I dreamt it than to think somebody that I love or is close to our family is doing it.
Correct.
And I've had that conversation. There have been a few who I've opened up to about that. And I've said, you know, is there any chance that this wasn't alien in nature or cryptid in nature or spiritual? Is there any chance maybe somebody in your family or friends were taking advantage of you? And in a handful of instances, they've burst into tears and they're like, I never thought of that, but oh my God, that's probably what happened. And they kind of go down that road. So I applaud you coming forward and being willing to share this, because I think people coming forward and sharing these unusual circumstances and these stories gives people that are listening that might have had these experiences a sense of relief. There are so many people that are kind of on that edge that feel like they're nuts, that people will think they're crazy, and they don't know how to process going forward because they haven't met anybody else like Haley who's had this happen. Then they hear somebody on a show like this, and it lets them know they're not so alone. So I applaud your willingness to come forward. We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, you remember the strange dreams and things. And I'm curious, as you've gotten older, have you spoken to family members? Has anybody else in your family had any experiences like this? We'll talk about that and more. Stay tuned. You're listening to the very best in paranormal programming. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is the Paranormal 360. Good evening. Welcome back to the program. Dave Schrader, your host here on the Paranormal 360, your home for all things strange and supernatural every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Haley Allison Ramsey, our guest. And for those of you listening to the show in the podcast version, we do have a link to Haley's website on today's program guide, so you can find her, find all the great work she's doing. And she hosts some amazing trips around the world that you'll get an opportunity to learn a little bit about. And I encourage you to check this out. Haley is a friend of mine and somebody I care about, trust, and believe in. And when she told me this story and opened up to me about it, it was something I asked, would you be willing to share this with our audience? She hesitantly agreed. Again, as she stated in the first segment, it's tough because you don't want your credibility, you don't want your character called into effect, but you also realize that there's something to the gift of having these experiences and being able to recover. Now, you said probably your earliest thoughts came in these dreamlike forms once a year of being chased by a dinosaur. And, you know, and then we talked a little bit about how weird is it that so many kids do this. I wonder is it that we're being telepathically manipulated in a sleep state so that we become more familiar with dinosaurs? We become more familiar with these creatures so that maybe when we do encounter them, we're desensitized to them a bit. So the fear might not be as high as it is when you're 3, 4, 5 years old witnessing these large reptilian-like creatures, right? What's your take on something like this? Again, obviously you said you can't say for 100% sure that this was an abduction, but you were definite that this dream came to you once a year for at least 4 years.
Right, and it's the consistency that it was an annual event as mm-hmm. far as dream goes. So if it was just a simple dream, why would it be happening on the same day every year so consistently unless it was some sort of planned event? And, you know, as far as this whole idea that children are so obsessed with dinosaurs, it almost seems like some sort of subtle indoctrination.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, to desensitize children to such a thing so that perhaps in the future, if people have maybe these dreams or screen memories of dinosaurs, they're not to think anything of it.
Right. That's something to think about, right? I mean, that's a really interesting new concept for me. I asked before the break, were there any other members of your immediate family that have come forward to you, and have you been open with your family about these type of experiences?
Yes and no. I didn't start to really open up with them about it until later in my early adult life because I was a bit embarrassed, to be mm-hmm. honest. I started having more of these. I was about 13 when I started having more abduction experiences that I believe were truly abduction experiences, but it seemed that they were coming to me via maybe screen memories that I was recalling through dreams, mm-hmm. or maybe they weren't dreams at all. I'm not really sure. I can't say for certain. But what I can say is that after I had 3 different experiences or dreams with the same being, and I'll dive into that more later, I had found an implant or some anomalous mass on the backside of my ovaries on my actual back. And we'll talk about that in more detail later on.
Right.
And it wasn't causing me any pain. It wasn't an issue, but it was there since I was 13. And so we jokingly called it my alien implant. Totally didn't think it was anything like that, but we just, in my family, we jokingly referred to it as such. And then going forward, I decided to finally share this with my family about my earlier experiences with, mm-hmm. which was with a gray. And it turns out my dad, who raised me, John, Major Johnny Lee Ramsey, he was Green Beret Special Forces. He fills me in and tells me that he worked at Area 51 for a time.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was
prior to your birth?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he had top security clearance. He did a lot of things. He worked for Oliver North during the Iran-Contra affair. He was involved in a lot of other top secret activities, and even 11 years of his record is scrubbed. So he was doing a lot of undercover things that we'll probably never know about. Unfortunately, I lost him in 2019, or I'd have a lot of questions for him now.
Right. When you hear this, and he mentions Area 51, at that age, when you open up to him and he opens up to you about that, did you have a real concept of what that meant?
Well, all he explained to me, and I'm sure I didn't get the whole story, but all he explained to me was that his job was to go in the back of essentially a really large 18-wheeler and guard cargo that was going into the base, the underground base, and he was guarding pieces of what he said appeared to look like reverse-engineered aircraft, and they were all broken down into small pieces. And so he would ride in, and it was completely dark inside, and he sat guard in there. As they drove in, he would then get out, and everything was on a need-to-know basis, of course.
Right.
So he would get out once they got into the garage. The men in the base would unload everything, and then they would reload it with other things that were meant to be taken out of the base. And so then he would get back in the truck, and then he would stand guard in the truck, guarding the cargo as they left the base. And he never told me much more than that. But I do remember earlier on, I would ask him questions, you know, Dad, what are your ideas about this whole extraterrestrial phenomenon? What do you think about aliens? And he was always very cynical and, oh, I don't believe in any of that. And but later on, as time went by, and I finally confided in him about some of what was going on with me and about what seemed to be strange with my implant, I remember him looking at me and going, well, I'll be damned. And he started to open up a little bit more with me. And then he starts to tell me about his experience at Area 51. And I said, so, Dad, can you tell me anything more? And he just said to me, you know, there's a lot more going on than you realize, Haley. So in the days, well, in the months before his death, he started to open up a little bit more with me about what he experienced.
I mean, that's, wow. I mean, that's pretty major, right? And to have these connections, what it brings to mind is I think of there are quite a few experiencers out there who later in life found out that their family was involved in one way, shape, or another with black ops, UFO crash retrieval, alien retrieval, things like that. And they were having abductions, and it's made me wonder if that kind of put a target on you because your father was already working in an industry like this. Was there this exchange that, you know, hey, you're in this to know this, and we're not necessarily going to tell you your daughter's going to be abducted or tested, but I wonder if that has anything to do with it, if people that are part of these programs just unknowingly, unwittingly become part of the research between the races, between the different alien breeds. It's something to consider. I mean, did you ever kind of put that question towards him?
You know, I didn't. And I really wish that I would have. But I do remember the look. He had always projected to me that, oh, there's no such thing as aliens. Prior to that, he was always very dismissive about it. But it wasn't until later, and I think maybe because he was stage 4 pancreatic cancer, he was sick, and that's kind of when I had let him know, hey, I want to show you something. And I started telling him a little bit about my experiences, and he just looked at me shocked, but not surprised in a sense. And he goes, wow. And he kind of just started opening up a little bit, and clearly he was not surprised. He knew more than he was letting on. And I never really pressed about it, but it did begin to occur to me that maybe because of our relationship and because I was his only daughter, that's why I could have been part of some project. And the fact that he worked at Area 51 and all of the other things that he did for the government, which did include sensitive missions going and, you know, taking out bad guys and doing the dirty work for the U.S. government, essentially. So he was involved in some pretty high-profile stuff that to this day, I'll probably never know about.
And I apologize for my questions tonight that'll seem a little hesitant and slowed because this is somebody I know and care about. I'm also trying to be very cognizant of her privacy, of things without wanting to push her into an uncomfortable situation. So you'll probably hear a little bit more hesitation in the way I talk to Haley than I would most guests. Plus, we're sitting 5 feet away from each other, and I don't want her to hit me with the stun gun if I hit a point she's uncomfortable with. We have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll take a quick look at weather. We'll jump back in and have more discussions. And let's talk about these three moments that you do remember that had to do with the Grays. We'll do that when we return right here on the Paranormal 360. We're back. This is the Paranormal 360, your home for all things supernatural, paranormal, every Sunday night. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. And remember, if you've just caught it and you've missed the beginning of the show, but you want to catch up, go check out WCCORadio.com, and you can find all of our podcasts there. It's Paranormal 360, and you'll be able to tune in and check out not only this episode, but all of the episodes going all the way back to our first one, and I think in about June. We're already a little over a half a year in here on the Paranormal 360, and we've got a lot of great topics that we've covered over the time, so I hope that you will go back and check that out. Sitting across from me right now in the studio is Haley Allison Ramsey. She's a friend of mine. She's here in the Twin Cities. She is somebody that has had experiences with aliens, alien experiences, and abductions. And in hour two, we're going to discuss some of the unbelievable evidence that was uncovered regarding these visitations, I guess, is the best way to discuss this. Now, Haley, let's mention, you briefly covered the fact that you kind of had memories of three interactions with grays. And again, you preface it with you're not sure if these are screen memories or dreams or how it's played out, but you do have three different individual memories of these encounters, correct?
Correct.
How old were you around when you had that first profound experience?
I was 13.
13.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to play into the important part in the next segment too, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. So what do you recall from that first encounter?
So from the first encounter that I had, this was a bit strange because this to me seemed that it could have been some type of screen memory, or perhaps it was a mix of a memory or something that my brain was trying to process of this very traumatizing experience I had. I do recall the first time that I met this gray being. It was a gray being, and he was very short. And the funniest distinct part of this was he was wearing some type of royal blue hoodie. Strange for a gray, right?
But it gets cold. There's no hair up there.
Right, exactly, yeah. Right. And so this was kind of interesting because I remember at the time I lived in South Texas and I lived on a cul-de-sac, and I knew that there was lots of kids on the cul-de-sac, but I was the oldest. And I remember going outside and seeing at the end of the cul-de-sac, the entrance to the street, there was a craft parked there. Now, I think this was more in a symbolic sense, something that my brain was trying to compute. The more I've thought about this, that this was some sort of way of saying, you don't have a choice. You can't leave, right? This is a craft parked right at the end of the street. There's no way out. But I knew that he wanted something to do with the other children. And for me, I've always felt this desire from the time that I was young. I always felt this desire to be a protector. And so I wanted to go and see what this is all about. And I felt like I had no choice. These gray beings were waiting outside, and I remember walking up to them and basically being like, who do you think you are? and so I go up, but I'm immediately struck because there's no words. There's no sense of communication by words, and it's this one specific gray being, and he had three fingers, and he had not quite a thumb, but almost like a thumb, three fingers and a thumb. Has his blue little hoodie on, no other type of clothing. And he basically comes and says, sit down. I want to have a chat with you.
Now, this is telepathically, though.
That was what was so striking to me at the time, because I'd never encountered that. It was just like straight to my mind. And I'm thinking, did I just hear this? And I tried to speak back, and it immediately went brain to brain. And I don't even know if we're speaking the same language, and I don't even know if that matters, because I think that when you communicate telepathically, there is no such thing as language, is what it seemed to be to me, which was also really intriguing. But he said, all I want to do is just ask you a few questions. Very calm, very positive, and I thought, okay.
Was the first question, are you happy with your insurance company?
No.
Okay. So it's not a Geico ad that maybe you're placing a memory over. Gotcha.
Right. No. Okay. So he comes and just like, you know, you might come and say, hey, come sit on my tailgate.
Right.
He's like, come sit on my craft. So I say, okay. So I go and I sit on the craft, and he goes, I just want to ask you a few questions, and that's it. You know? So I thought, all right, this isn't so bad. So I went and sat on the edge of the craft. But mind you, I'm still noticing that it's in the street, blocking any way in or out of the street. And I was perceiving this as a threat. You know, like I didn't really have a choice. He's giving me the choice. He's giving me the illusion of choice. Like I have this idea of choice to speak to him, but not so much. And that's kind of how I take it, as if my brain was trying to somehow rationalize this perhaps prior abduction experience, or this making this into some sort of false memory to make sense of it. I'm sitting there thinking, okay, so he asks me questions and I answer. And then he's like, okay, that's all I really wanted. Thank you. Goodbye.
Are you able to relate what those questions were, or is that part still lost to you?
I had zero recollection of the questions. But when I woke up from this, I thought, why should I not be able to recall the questions? Because I thought, you know, if this was just an ordinary dream, why would I not be able to remember the questions he was asking me? That was something that really stood out to me. Could it have been a gnarly dream? It's possible. I don't know for certain. But what really stuck out to me at that point was the fact that I could not remember those questions. And it just really...
But yet the rest of the dream is vivid.
Completely vivid. I remember exactly what he looked like. I remembered his exact craft and the size of his craft. It was like a saucer, a round saucer. And it was taking up the size of the entire width of the street. So it was very strange. And then that happened and I thought, this is strange. But I kind of just let it go thinking, well, maybe it was just a weird dream. But I never felt quite right about it. And I do remember when I woke up, each time that I had a dream related to this gray, when I did wake up, I do remember having what felt like a very out-of-body experience. When I woke up, it was one of those, bam, right, being slammed back into your body, into your bed, almost the way that it's felt when I've experienced I've only experienced astral projection once or twice in my life, but when you're coming back to your body, I woke up and it's like, bam, being slammed back into my body.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because there are many experiencers I've spoken to over the years that will kind of wake up as their body is going through the wall from their bed outside. And I've often wondered, are they really taking the physical form, mm-hmm, or are they abducting the astral form? That would leave less upset in the house if your husband, boyfriend, parents, whatever, come into the room, they still see you there. But some part of you is gone.
Right.
So it's interesting that you say you kind of felt like this astral projection then being pushed back into your body, mm-hmm, having that happen. We have to take another quick break. This is the joy of live radio. We will be back, though. We've got more to discuss. And in the next hour, we're going to talk about the evidence that was left behind. And it is startling, folks. What you think you've heard, put it away, because tonight things are going to change. We'll talk about that next right here on the Paranormal 360. So what would you do if you thought that you were having experiences with aliens? What have you done if you've had these experiences? There is a safe place to talk about this. You can always email me, Dave@paranormal60.com. That's Dave@paranormal60.com. And tell me your stories. And if you would like me to share them in upcoming episodes, I will. If you just want to share them with me so you have somebody that you can talk to and listen to, share them with me. And I'll be more than happy to read them and try to help you in any way I can, whether it's just being a listening ear or helping to connect you with people that might be able to help you understand your situation a little bit better. Dave@paranormal60.com. Haley Allison Ramsey, our guest this evening, as we were talking about her abduction scenarios and situations. We heard about the first one. Now, you said that you've met with what you believe to be grays three times. How quick in succession did these other meetings come? Because that really wasn't an abduction in the truest sense of what people think of, like you're taken against your will. You said that you kind of, it gave you the opportunity to feel like you had free will. Oh, just sit down and talk with me. But you kind of knew, do what you have to do, because
right,
you're not going anywhere.
And truth be told, mm-hmm, I very likely could have had an abduction that I didn't recall, but I had some sort of screen memories that were brought to me by a dream. And I've read this to be the case with several other abductees as well, where there was physical evidence of an abduction, but they don't ever recall it.
Right.
And I think that's why regression hypnotherapy could be a very helpful tool in that regard. And I've only gone once, but I now think that it would be very helpful for me in retrospect to dive more into that and find out exactly what did happen. My second encounter.
Let me mention one thing to you, because I had somebody open my eyes to a concept.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you to take this into consideration, because obviously I'm all about the truth and wanting to understand and learn. But one thing I would warn you about going further is right now you have thoughts and ideas, and we all like to get confirmation. We all think we want confirmation, but once you get it, it's yours and you can't get rid of it. It will now not be just something that you ponder. It will be an answer. And that sometimes can weigh heavily on the soul and the heart. So I just encourage you to make sure that you're ready for the answers that you may get, whether it's you're crazy or you've been abducted, you've been implanted, you're part of a study, whatever. Those can be life-altering things, because now you can't get rid of that thought. It's not something that can just be dismissed. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
I just want you to be cautious, because sometimes we think what we want to know, and then what we find out can be really devastating to who we are.
I think that's partially why I have waited as long as I have. Because part of me wants to know the answer, and part of me I'm not so sure about.
Sure.
But with that said, the second encounter that I had, it was probably just a few weeks later with this gray entity. And it seemed to be some type of, I can't explain what it was, mm-hmm. but it was in my childhood house where I was there alone, and it was almost meant to be some psychological manipulation, because I was in a safe place, or a place that I was meant to feel safe, and I had been playing outside, and then I saw the craft coming. Now, the theme of consent played a very large role here.
Right.
Because I remember playing outside, I saw the craft, and once I saw the craft above the trees, I thought, I'm not doing this. I don't know why I increasingly grew afraid, because nothing inherently bad happened previously, but I immediately got overwhelmed with anxiety and panic, and I ran into the house, and I went into the bathroom, and I locked the door. The being came in and was on the other side of the door, begging me to open the door. Haley, I just want to ask you a few questions. I just want to talk to you. I just want to ask you a few questions. So it's always prodding me with, I want to ask you a few questions. And in his way, I believe that was his attempt to try to get my consent to do something, whether it was experimental, whether it was asking me questions. But I had the door locked and closed. I was sitting on the other side, and I said no. And I kept insisting on saying no. And he was trying really hard to push, and I refused. And it was something about having that closed, locked door, him being on the other side, and I was saying no. And there's something to that, I believe, when it comes to giving consent. And this whole, and it's interesting too, because in my life, going forward, even beyond that, this theme of consent comes up a lot in my life. So after that, he kind of retreated and went away. Now, the third encounter, which I believe was the third encounter,
we're going to have to talk about at the top of the next hour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I want to, I'll plant this seed with you right now. Interesting that you say these elements and looking for consent. A lot of people are hearing this and thinking of the demonic realm and the fact that demons need consent to do the things that they do.
Oh.
They think of the vampiric realm. Right? We always know that you have to invite the vampire to cross the threshold of your home.
Mm-hmm.
The black-eyed kids, which is a more recent phenomena that really has people frightened and wondering, are we encountering hybrids, these children with giant black eyes, needing to get into your home or have you elect to follow them? Strange stuff. We'll talk more with Haley. We'll hear about the third encounter, and we'll find out about her strange evidence when we return right here to the Paranormal 360.